Do you hate YouTube ads? Because I do. YouTube also recently jacked up the price of YouTube Premium to almost $20 a month. But I have good news. All of my videos are now available ad-free and a day early to my Patreon supporters. For $5 a month, you get early access ad-free. I upload 25 to 30 videos a month, so you're getting a really good deal. Enjoy the video.
To the first question, because you responded that you do believe that science is self-correcting. Do you not, or do you believe that that is circular?
How would that be circular?
Well, if science is self-correcting in that respect, by the kind of general understanding of self-correcting, then I guess it can never be wrong, right?
That's literally... So science has proven prior scientific ideas to be false, therefore it can never be false. Like, think about what you're saying.
Well, I mean, that is literally circular. If it's proven
that's
itself,
not circular.
If it's proven itself to be wrong, then how could it ever be correct, ever?
Okay, that's very different from what you said earlier. You said science can never be wrong, and now you're saying science can never be right. So what's your actual argument?
It's the same thing. If it can never be wrong, right? So say, for example, up there you've got evolution is true.
Yep, because it is.
If science can prove its... Okay. Yep. If science can prove itself to be wrong, if science one day proves itself that evolution isn't true, which could happen... Right?
Yeah, it's theoretically possible. Science is not dogmatic.
So then how can you make an objective statement, evolution is true, and appeal to that in any rational sense?
So for some reason, it seems like you're thinking that the only thing that can be true is something that is 100% true and is, I don't know, perhaps like irreducible and requires no further explanation. Science doesn't deal in absolutes. But you don't have to have absolute certainty in order to claim that something is true or accurate or precise. So for example, if I were to say that the width of the United States is 3,100 kilometers, I don't know what it is, but I'm just going to say that. And then we find out it's actually 3,101 kilometers wrong. Now, you could say that my previous statement was false, but do you understand how that's not the same thing as, like, it's... I'm trying to think of a way to phrase this that doesn't sound silly, but, like, if we have 99% accuracy, that's not the same thing as the entire idea is wrong.
Right, but, and even though I understand what you're meaning when you say that, it does kind of sound like you're making a justification for something being close enough to correct, therefore it should be correct and everyone should accept it, and if you deny it, then, well, you're an idiot, right?
Wow, that was, you poisoned the well, so thoroughly there at the end by attaching so many things that I never said. That was fantastic.
Maybe that's fair. Maybe let me take a step back. So yeah, it's true. I did kind of add a lot of things there. So if, let's use your example, the width of the United States, 3,100 kilometers long, and eventually we discovered that it's actually 3,101 kilometers long. To say that the previous conclusion that it was 3,100 kilometers wrong was incorrect, I mean, that is something I believe most rational people would hold to, that the previous conclusion was wrong.
Sure. So what happens is, what if you wouldn't argue that because we were off by 1 kilometer or whatever, you wouldn't then therefore argue that the entire scientific process of making measurements is totally false, right?
No, I wouldn't argue that at all.
Okay, So this is the thing with this, that would be the equivalent of what I think you're doing here. Oh, well, science, like if we pick like, I don't know, evolution or the Big Bang or something, like, oh, science discovered this new thing that was part of that, that was inconsistent with what people used to believe. That means the entire theory is incorrect. That's where it becomes very specious. No, I don't think specious is the right word, but very like, I don't know. It's like very intellectually dishonest.
Okay. And I...
Yeah, specious would be the correct word because it can mean misleading.
In a sense, I do agree with that. But I would say, or my position would be, my disagreement to that would be, if you are using a particular method to reach a specific conclusion and you hold that conclusion to be a fact, like an undeniable fact, and I am using precise language here for, I'm using precise language purposefully. If this quote unquote undeniable fact is later changed or adapted in some way by that same scientific method that was used to reach that fact, then why should anyone trust that scientific method in the first place?
Okay, so there's two ways we can approach this. The first thing would be, who would you rather trust, or what kind of method or system would you rather trust? One that asserts these are the truths and you must not question them, or one that is capable of discovering errors even within itself, admitting to them, and holding itself accountable?
So basically, which method do I believe is superior?
Yeah, like, do you believe in any religious text?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, and so do you believe that anything in that religious text even can be false?
I believe that it could be falsified, but I don't believe that it's false. So I guess if you're saying, can it be false?
Okay, well, that's the same thing as science in a way.
In a way... I mean, it depends. It depends which scientific...
So why should I trust what you believe in if it can be false?
Wait, hold on. It does depend in a way in which specific scientific theory you hold to be undeniably true. And so for the scientific theory of evolution, or evolution specifically, I mean, it doesn't seem that it could be falsified as far as I'm concerned. But I mean, like...
Evolution? It could have been. It's just that it's passed every single test.
It's passed every single test.
The thing with
evolution is that we do need to be a bit more precise in terms of what we were referring to at evolution. So evolution, as far as I'm sure you were told,
if you're going to say if you believe in evolution, then you have to believe the whole universe came from nothing, and then cosmic evolution, stellar evolution, and then planets, and then abiogenesis. Those things aren't evolution.
Evolution, as far as I believe what you were probably raised or taught to believe and what I was probably taught in school or whatever, basically an organism in a harsh environment adapts to that environment, acquires new characteristics via random genetic mutations for the sake of survival, and that, random genetic mutation is passed on to its offspring for the sake of survival. Am I wrong? Did I get anything wrong there? Is that not evolution that you hold to, or what?
It's not that bad. It lacks a lot of, I say it's imprecise and it mixes things up a little bit. It's not that bad. I mean, we can work with that.
Well, I mean, I guess we could work with it, but I mean, if that's not the definition of evolution that you sort of are or were expecting, then which one were you expecting? Because I mean, that, if evolution is saying multiple things, that's as far as I've understood it. I'm sure as far as most people have understood it. So, you know, what is the differentiating factor between what I just sort of described as evolution and what I guess
because you seemed to imply that an organism acquires some sort of new ability or trait during its lifetime and then passes that on to its offspring, and it doesn't work that way. That's either like a turbo driven like super evolution or Lamarckian. and Lamarckian evolution is false, save for some weird epigenetic examples. But what happens is you have a whole evolution doesn't happen to single to individual organisms. It happens to a whole population, because in a population, most of the individuals are pretty similar, but some are at the tail end of certain extremes, and that can be for any characteristic that they have. Now, some of them are better suited for that environment, which means statistically they're more likely to live longer and play pelvic pinochle with members of the other species more often, and then have more offspring. And those offspring are going to, by and large, be like them, right?
Right.
But those kinds of changes are subtle and incremental. It's not the case that one day, like we say, for example, birds are the descendants of theropod dinosaurs. It's not the case that one day a velociraptor laid an egg and inside that egg was a chicken, right? It happens so gradual that it doesn't ever just happen.
Right. And I guess
but this is over vast periods of time, species become completely different species.
So I mean, when you just said over the vast period of time, species can become more species, maybe I butchered that, but that was what I heard. Why, when you say it's testable, how is that specifically testable if,
sure,
you know, that vast period of time we actually weren't even really there to measure what happened or took place over that vast period of time?
Nobody thinks you need an eyewitness to actually prove that something happened. You just need evidence. And actually, what we know is eyewitness testimony is the most unreliable form of evidence, like with respect to a court of law, which is interested in proving what happened. So if evolution has taken place, then what would the evidence look like? Well, for one, all life on this planet would be related. Now, if you wanted to falsify evolution, now, that idea stems way back into the 1800s. So if you wanted to falsify evolution, then what we would need to do is figure out, how do you actually test if two things are related? And then eventually in the early 1900s, yeah, we figured out how to do that. And now we've sequenced countless genomes. And what we find is, not only is everything related, but the degrees to which they are related are exactly what we would have predicted. All of the, like for us, we're most closely related to the great apes, and then we're slightly less related, but related more to the other primates than any other form of life on this planet, and so on and so forth. Evolution could easily have been falsified by the genetic record, but it confirmed exactly what we would have thought. Also, if evolution is true, then that means the organisms of today are the descendants of different organisms of the past, because we both understand that the implication for evolution is that species change over time. And the oldest fossils are of completely different organisms that don't exist anymore. No living organism is found in the ancient fossil record. There are a few weird examples, like ginkgo trees and like one or two species of horseshoe crab, and maybe like a coelacanth, but they don't go back all that far. And it's actually a pretty diverse group. The ones today aren't the ones you find in the fossil record. But we have well over a million documented species, and we find only a couple of them in the ancient fossil record, which there's nothing to say that that literally can't happen, but whatever. So like those two examples are exactly what we would have expected, and that's what we found. It could have easily been falsified, but instead it was confirmed.
The thing is that in terms of that standard, that burden that was met to confirm the original ancestor, the original species, before the species diverged into, you know, a different taxonomical species, that burden, it seems that you have suggested that that burden, the only burden that was necessary to confirm this, were two things that we were looking for. One, that there have to be like a relational genome similarities between...
First of all, I said this would have falsified it, not confirmed it.
Okay, I think I heard confirmed somewhere in there.
Well, I guess I said both, but I originally started off with, this is how you could prove evolution false, but that's not what happened.
But the thing is, okay, so from my deduction, the way to prove that it was false is if you weren't able, scientists weren't able to find any relation between human beings and, I guess, another species on the planet, correct?
Yeah, that would have instantly been catastrophic. But I'll let you go on, but real quick, when you said all you found were two things, that's extremely disingenuous because the DNA record is not one thing. We've tested the genomes of tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of organisms and confirmed those multiple lines of evidence. So it's not one thing. It's literally huge, huge numbers of things. But anyways, go on.
I didn't mean to be disingenuous, but I was trying to simplify it in a way that would kind of help me be more concise. And I guess there was really no way to simplify it without it coming across as disingenuous. But what I meant from that is kind of like two categories. One category being, or I guess one standard of proof, I should say, being the genome relationship between humans and other species. And the other category being fossil records from the past. Is that fair?
Yeah.
So the way in which I would deduce that the way in which to, I guess, falsify evolution would be if those two categories weren't met. But the thing is, the issue that I have here is that scientists came up with the evidence for these two categories. They established this evidence and they found that it was sufficient evidence, but they only limited themselves to these two categories. There could have been a standard where you needed five categories, but three categories I guess we don't know about, right? Or that we didn't hypothesize. But the thing is, we haven't. We've suggested that these two categories are sufficient for evolution to be true and undeniable. But the point I'm making is that standard.
The DNA is not thing. Objective. You're saying that that's not objective?
I'm saying it's not sufficient for me.
Why?
Well, I mean, why is it pretty...
I asked a question and then I interrupted, but I want to get this point out. Like you said, well, if it's just based on one or two things, well, five things would have been better. Yeah, but the thing with evolution is there's really... The genetics is really the only... I would argue it's basically the only thing you need. The fossil record is extremely good as well because the genetics is the perfect test for confirming the idea. It's exactly like you would never say that, well, you know, I know that the DNA showed that this guy is the father, like on the Maury Povich show or whatever, but, you know, shouldn't they test like 10 other things? Like, no, everybody knows that the DNA can't be a coincidence. I mean, it's just absurd to argue otherwise.
That's fair. I wouldn't say that is like an irrational sort of position in that respect.
Sure.
So in respect to the DNA evidence, since you seem to be appealing to that as the sort of most reliable evidence that there is for evolution, I mean, as far as I'm aware, and you can correct me if I may be mistaken, but the evidence in regards to this specific category is that human beings and our closest relatives, which would be apes, right? Share about, what is it, 98.2% DNA exactly?
Well, us and chimps, it's 98.6. And then I don't remember, we're less related to gorillas. Fun fact, chimpanzees are also related to us more strongly than they are to gorillas. So that one goes both ways. I don't remember what the numbers specifically are. I only know the chimp one off the top of my head.
So I actually had this conversation with a bunch of evolutionists in another life. I asked her specifically, like, in terms, because she was referring to the genome sequence, right? in terms of the genome sequence, she was actually using the androgenous virus as one of the kind of markers that is another.
Well, that's another one. And that one is.
Well, it
pretty devastating for a counter argument.
Well, here's the thing, because I feel like she was flopping a bit, but I want to ask, well, I'm sure you know the difference in between the genome sequence, like the entire genome sequence of the human body, within the human body, and the genome sequence within our closest relatives, which, you know, would be the apes, between 100%, right? 100% being the human being, and 98.6% being the apes, that difference, 1.4%, do you know how much that would account for? I
don't understand the question, like, at all.
It's what, okay, so the question wasn't actually quite good, but the 1.4 difference, why is that difference acceptable for you to conclude, or, you know, not just yourself, but scientists to conclude that because of this 1.4 difference, this is sufficient enough for us to believe that.
I understand your question.
Yeah.
So it really has nothing to do with just that number and us. Like the argument isn't, well, yeah, if it would have only been 95%, then we would have said it's false. Or if it would have only been 90%, then we would have said it's false. That's actually not the argument. The argument is, I think I said this earlier, we get these perfect, like, correlations, or we call them, people like to call them nested hierarchies, right? So it's not just that we are very closely related to the other great apes. We are great apes too, but it's not just that we are most closely or very closely related to them. It's that they're also most closely related to us. And then you get this perfect branching out where we're less related to the other primates, like monkeys, for example, and then we're even less related to tarsiers, and then we're even less related to mammals at large, like in general, and then we're even less related to reptiles, and then even less, so on and so forth. And you can pick any animal you want. You can go to a crocodile, and you'll find, like, yep, crocodiles are most closely related to, I think it would actually be birds. I'm not 100% sure about that, but I think it is. And then they're even less closely related to snakes, and then turtles, yeah, or whatever. So the pattern exists in every walk of life across any type of species along any, like, taxonomic grouping you want to do. As you go more general in those taxonomic groups, the DNA relatedness expands, I guess. There's, like, less in common, but that's exactly what you would expect.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that is true. That is true, and I don't deny that. But here's, I guess, also, like, not the fundamental, but the issue that comes in regards to the standard of evidence. Within these groups, there's been a jump. Like, I'm just going to be plain honest, there's been a jump or assumption that's made that these specific groups came from this specific ancestor, and this ancestor is responsible for, you know, the reproduction and the species that we now have today within these different taxonomical groups. And, I mean, look, if you want to kind of use the fossil records as the evidence for this ancestor existing, I mean, there would be no... it wouldn't be dishonest for someone to look at those fossil records and say, well, hey, why does that have to be a great ape, or like this kind of mythical ape that used to exist, which we don't have any sort of real evidence on? Why can't we just refer to that as an ape?
So you're saying, on what grounds, when we find a missing link, do the scientists actually claim, yes, that actually is a missing link, not something that just existed and died and isn't related to anything else?
Not that it isn't related to anything else, but that...
Related to us, I guess.
Or related to a species that already exists. Because, I mean, the way that I understand it is that with the missing link, the missing link is, I guess, satisfied by the fossil records, right? Or am I wrong?
The missing link is satisfied by the fossil record? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, the missing link, like the common ancestor.
We have, I mean, we have multiple cousins and common ancestors in the fossil record for many different animals. And probably plants too, but I know fuck all about plant evolution.
But the point is, the point I'm making is that the sort of, among the species that we have today, which we can group in, you know, taxonomical hierarchies, the original organism within that taxonomical hierarchy that doesn't exist today, right? The common ancestor, we don't see the common ancestor walking around on Earth today, and we don't have any
sort of... Yeah, it's extinct.
It's extinct. I mean, that is an assumption. Well, I mean,
if they evolve, then it in most cases, if they evolve, then it couldn't exist.
But well, do you mind clarifying what you mean by that? If it evolved, then it couldn't have existed?
Yeah, I mean, if they evolve, then that means that the population changes over time into something else. So it can't continue to exist. Now there are sort of examples where that can happen, like wolves still exist and we have dogs because they got separated and wolves are just doing their own thing. And the breeding of dogs wasn't really exactly natural selection. It wasn't natural selection really at all. Well, I mean, you could argue in the beginning it sort of was. But if a species evolves, then that oftentimes necessitates that the ancestral species doesn't exist anymore because it turned into another species.
So it turned into another species. That original species no longer exists. But the species that it turned into, which one was first? Humans or apes?
Well, apes, obviously.
Okay, and then the apes evolved into the humans, but the apes, however, they are kind of, you know, still doing their thing, still roaming around, because I guess not enough time has gone for them to be extinct, no?
You're making the mistake that evolution claims humans came from chimpanzees. No, we're just related to them. Many millions of years ago, there were no chimps and there were no humans. When we say we share a common ancestor with the great apes, that doesn't mean that a really long time ago, the great apes that we have today walking around were walking around, and then eventually one of them pooped out a human, and then the humans went off and did their own thing. No, it's not like that at all.
Sure. But when you said that the original species that has gone extinct, and but, you know, over time acquired adaptations through random mutations and went into a new species between humans and apes. You said that apes were first, right? So then where exactly, if we didn't come from apes, then where did the humans come from?
No, we did come from apes, but the apes that we evolved from are extinct. They're just different apes that don't currently exist. And the apes we have today evolved from other apes that don't currently exist.
So, I mean, are you suggesting that there were two, like, original ape ancestors? One that over time evolved into apes, and then another that over time evolved into humans? Is that what I'm understanding?
Well, humans are apes. So, like, if you go back far enough... Here, let me draw a picture here. So, like, yes, but no. So like these are typical diagrams that you see for like evolutionary branches. So down here would be a very, very ancient ape that all great apes today are related to: us, orangutans, gibbons, chimpanzees, gorillas, whatever. Now there are all these branches that gradually form their own branches, like the gibbon separated from all the others back here. And then later on, the orangutan separate, the orangutan group separated from the other apes up here. The most recent divergence was the human chimp one, but it's not the case that this thing that was down here is the same thing that's up here before this branch happens. No, this line is evolving too. It's a different species all the way up this line too. And then eventually it's split into the human and the chimp one. So you could say that, what the hell? Sorry, my stupid TikTok thing, it made me verify that I'm a human. So you could say that this split way back here, a really long time ago, is the split that eventually gave rise to, it split off the human from the other apes, but it also is the split for many of the other apes as well. So hopefully that made sense. I did my best.
You did do your best, but okay. With that diagram, that one vertical line where it's just kind of consistent, that line basically represents the original, the common ancestor, does it not?
No. Well, it represents a different common ancestor every time there's a branch. Because when there's a branch, what that means is you have a population, but then it splits. So the one goes over here. Now, it looks like that one, the way it's drawn, it looks like that other one continues and it's not changed. But in reality, that's not what happens, because it would actually be better to draw it vertically and then have it split like that to indicate that every time it splits, the right and the left half are different and they're not the original one. It's just that that doesn't fit neatly onto papers usually.
Well, yeah, I understand your point, but in that respect, then wouldn't that suggest that you wouldn't be able to determine which species came first between apes and humans, or between the gibbons and the chimpanzees? No?
I don't understand why that would be a problem. If you had enough fossils, you could determine it, or you can determine it with the genetic record.
The thing is, so the thing in which you just explained, if there was the evolutionary process that occurred over time, which resulted in a new species, it almost seems like you are, in a way, insisting that these new species, every time a branch or a split occurred, that two new species within that taxonomical category arose from that split. Is that correct?
Generally, I would say that's often what happens, but sometimes the population that, like when one population leaves, the other one doesn't necessarily change, because if they're in the same environment and the selection pressures are still the same, then they may not change very much at all for a really long time. But later on, a different part of that population could split off and go to a different area, for example. So like Neanderthals and us both split off from this other hominid called Homo heidelbergensis. So Homo heidelbergensis split off. There were two subpopulations from it. One gave rise to us, one gave rise to them. For some of the other species of human, like the Denisovans or whatever, I'm not really sure where it's thought they came from or whatever. But so like what you're saying sometimes can happen, but not always.
So, I mean, I actually appreciate this conversation. I did consider you a troll, but I think you were pretty respectful here. And I think we actually had a pretty decent debate. The thing is that coming back to your original statement, I know we only went over the first statement, really, evolution is true. For me, and for many other people, for many other Christians as well, it's not undeniable whatsoever. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, evolution is basically a government-mandated fairy tale, to be honest. There are way, way too many assumptions being made in order for people to believe in evolution. But the thing is that the reason
why... But what about the evidence?
The evidence is not sufficient as far as I'm concerned.
What would sufficient evidence be?
For, well, for the common ancestor.
Like, if you were a 300-year-old man, you would not think what you think, because you would have lived through all the new data that popped up every time, I feel like.
Perhaps,
anyways, what would sufficient evidence be?
Sufficient evidence that we came from a common ancestor that I mean, it's so funny you say this, because sufficient evidence would honestly be recorded history, like recorded history literature including.
That's such a horrible standard. Do you know what Herodotus's nickname is?
No, I don't.
The father of lies.
I mean, you could also probably replace that name for Satan as well. But
sure. So now we can discount all of literature. I can just say the Bible was actually written by Satan, and nobody can do anything to counter that argument except to appeal to blind faith or circular reasoning.
Well, I mean, everyone eventually somewhere appeals to circular reasoning. Maybe not blind faith, or sometimes they do. But I don't think that is very useful in this discussion, because, I mean, if I were to accept evolution, I mean, the thing is, from the very beginning, I'd have to accept that a single-celled amoeba, right, existed or appeared on Earth with no kind of guiding principle or mechanism that made it appear from Earth, unless, you know,
there somehow would be life operates on chemistry, and chemistry would have been what got life to exist in the first place,
right? But and again, I do appreciate that we've had an honest discussion, so I'm not gonna kind of derail, but for us to assume that chemistry, you know, existed and brought about the single celled amoeba from the first place, it to be honest, it just takes away a lot of faith from my perspective, too much in my perspective. So the thing is, here's the thing,
but when what, how is that less palatable than a magical creation out of nothing?
Well, I mean, a magical creation out of nothing with no intelligent designer, I don't believe that.
Yeah, I'm referring to your intelligent designer. How is that more believable?
Well, you said a magical creation out of nothing. Without an intelligent designer, then it is a magical creation out of nothing.
It's a magical creation out of nothing with an intelligent designer.
It isn't. It's a magical
creation. Yes, it is.
Well, the thing is, okay, so here's the thing. We're never going to agree on this. This is just where we don't agree. So
this is where you're wrong.
You can insist, but insistence doesn't make you correct.
This is wrong, even according to you. What did God make the universe out of?
Well, God is eternal, all-powerful. He can make it out of just his thoughts. That is literally not his thoughts, his language and his words. That is what he did, as has been revealed in Genesis.
That's nothing.
I mean, depending on how do you define nothing?
The absence of anything.
Well, I mean, you know, the definition is, I mean, I don't even want to really go down that rabbit hole.
That's fine. Neither do I. So, and I sort of, I pushed it way back to something not necessary, but God took some clay and then breathed life, whatever that means, breathed life into the nostrils of Adam and formed a fully formed human being. How is that less believable than chemical systems evolve into replicating cells?
Well, the thing is, even by asking that question, it just assumes that your standard is just inherently superior than my standard.
I didn't even... What?
And my standard...
What standard?
Well, the standard of evidence, right?
Yeah, what standard? You mean claiming that because you have a book and your book says this book is true, then therefore that proves it. Are you comparing that standard to my standard of empirical scientific data?
Well, ignoring the straw man, it is still you insisting that your standard
is you said that the truth is revealed in scripture. That is, this book is true, that proves it.
Well, is that even a book?
Or
is that
yes, I wrote it? This book. I also have my own Bible that says the same thing, the Spanky Bible. This book is true. There, that proves it. And every prophecy in the Spanky Bible has come true.
Real quick, define a book for me. What is a book?
A book?
I just want to, yeah, go ahead.
I guess a book is a collection of writings placed, you can have an e-book, so how am I going to come up with something that's going to be universal for something that's digital and in print? It's just a collection of writings created to be read. I don't know. That's a weird question.
Well, even
what is,
in that,
what is this? What is that? Me not being able to tell you what a book is, that would prove
it wouldn't prove anything. But I was okay. I was curious if you kind of had a specific definition or not.
Not really.
So, not really. Huh? Okay. Well, yeah. Well, the thing is you know, this was a good discussion. Again, I think it still hinges on the insistence of you being right, you know, and me being wrong. So, you know,
I've been really explaining to you the evidence is all I've done this entire time. I've given you rational justifications for why I think this proposition, evolution is true, can be supported. And I used the exact same standard that anybody would use to justify anything apart from religious beliefs, which are just said to be divinely inspired or personally revealed or whatever.
You said you use the exact same standards that anyone would use to
prove anything? Yeah, to justify anything except for religious views.
So, you don't believe that people use self-evident truth, like induction, as a standard to justify certain things?
I mean, that might be like your starting point for like rationalizing, okay, how do we even know that evidence itself is reliable. Precisely. Or whatever? But like, do you believe that wizards and warlocks and dementors exist? Because there's a lot of books that say that they do, written by J.K. Rowling.
Red herring. We'll just go into an endless rabbit hole if I satisfy that red herring. But induction, just mentioned that it's a starting point to, you know, challenge whether evidence is real. Absolutely. Absolutely. And why wouldn't you start there?
So you're talking about like a priori assumptions about existence and reality and our ability to have thoughts and all and to do reasoning?
Of course, this is necessary for anyone to be able to justify their specific beliefs. Absolutely.
Okay, sure. So, like I said, that would be a starting point for, that would be a starting point for like justifying that your investigation was rational, reasonable, whatever. But that's just like debate bro, philosophy bro stuff, like, oh, I've proven something scientifically, empirically, and I've justified it because it best approximates reality or whatever. Like, literally nobody, like, when I take a blood test and I see that, oh, my A1C levels are whatever, oh, well, I have now diagnosed you with type 2 diabetes. I don't say to the doctor, how do you actually rationalize and justify this A1C test? Like, how do you know that the computer isn't actually manipulated by Satan? Like, nobody does that.
No one does that. But with my point in terms of induction being the starting place to be able to reason anything, maybe it would be a good starting, or the justification for starting at that point would be well, why would I even go to the doctor in the first place to test for this specific thing? Oh, did your cat leave or something?
No, I'm just pointing to my cat for the audience. I'm listening to you.
Oh, okay, gotcha. The starting point or justification would be, why would I even go to the doctor in the first place to test for this specific thing in my genetics?
Why not just pray?
Right. Exactly. Or why not just sit home? Or why
yeah,
not
Yeah, because
just,
the God hypothesis fails every time. That's why.
Well, so in a way, you're kind of appealing to a sense of, well, you know, you're appealing to an ought. You're saying that you ought to do these kind of things rather than just pray or rather than just sit home. No?
I'm talking from the standpoint of results. I'm talking about what gets results. People have been locked in basements and tortured for decades, prayed every single day, and nothing ever miraculously happened.
Right, yeah.
And I still don't have a McChicken.
That conversation is whatever. It's whatever. I don't want to... You know, I love my sister, but... You know, it's whatever. Anyway, dude, I think this is a good discussion. I think it's kind of been around the horseshoe, so I don't think we're really going to gain much continuing. But thanks for having me on.
Yeah, come back and we can talk about induction and rationalizing thoughts and all that kind of stuff, because that's a very different topic than evolution. But
I agree.
Yeah.
All right. See ya. Bye.
Later.